Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Thanks for joining us on Primetime. Bharati Jagdish with you on Market View. Now, from rising food prices to the cost of housing, global inflation has been hitting pockets everywhere. And just yesterday, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell, in his most hawkish remarks to date, said that until there is clear and convincing evidence that inflation is in retreat, the U.S. Central Bank will keep raising interest rates. They will keep pushing. He said, even if this involves moving past broadly understood levels of neutral, the Fed won't hesitate. While central banks today have the tools to handle most of the causes of inflation we see today to effectively bring inflation under control, they may have to tighten to a point where growth will slow sharply. So the question is, what's next? To what extent are the current interest rate hikes and quantitative easing plans going to work, and how much more can or should be done? How can this situation actually be prevented in the future? Joining us to talk about this now, David Kuo, co-founder of The Smart Investor. Hi, David.
Hello, good afternoon, Bharati.
Nice to be talking to you, David. And I know you have very strong views on this, but let's put this in context first. Powell repeated his commitment to getting inflation closer to the Fed's 2% target. He said it may not be easy and it could come at the expense of a 3.6% unemployment rate. That is just above the lowest level since the 1960s. You actually think that higher levels of unemployment may, in fact, be the Fed's endgame? Explain this.
Well, the thing is, it's not me, Bharati. I mean, I'm not an economist. I mean, I read a lot of economic journals. And many years ago, there was an economist called Phillips. And anybody who is a fan of economics will be very familiar with what Phillips actually said, which is that you cannot have low levels of unemployment and low inflation at the same time. One of those two things has to give, simply because if you have low levels of unemployment, it means that demand, aggregate demand from the people who are in work is high. And if people have money in their pockets and they have bargaining power in terms of asking for higher wages, because there aren't that many people who are unemployed, it therefore means that they can go out and spend. And if they can spend that money, Bharati, and if there aren't enough producers out there to produce it, then of course prices will go up, because that is really what inflation is. I mean, people talk about all sorts of inflation, but inflation ultimately is when too much money is chasing a limited amount of goods. And whether we're talking about pizzas, whether we're talking about nasi lemak, whatever, if you're the only nasi lemak seller around and there are lots of people out there queuing up, waiting to go and buy your nasi lemak, you raise your prices, because that is the way that the markets operate. And I think what has really happened with Jay Powell is that he has no choice now, Bharati. He has nothing left in his armory apart from raising interest rates in order to dampen down inflation by increasing unemployment.
Here's the thing. We're not just talking about unemployment increasing marginally. They're talking about perhaps even inducing a recession. Minneapolis Fed President Neil Kashkari said it's an open question whether he and his colleagues will have to induce this recession to bring inflation down. So I guess we have to be prepared for a global inflation, don't we? Well, a global recession, to be specific.
It's both of those things, Bharati. The thing is, the recession is an unintended consequence of the increase in interest rates, because, as I said, the only tool that the U.S. Fed has left is to increase interest rates. And, of course, it's also withdrawing some of that liquidity, some of that money that they pumped into the U.S. economy and therefore the global market. Now, what he has left now is to increase interest rates. And he's already said that he will carry on increasing interest rates until he sees inflation starting to come down. The only way that inflation will start to come down is when you and I think that we haven't got any more disposable income left, because whatever disposable income we have, we're throwing at our mortgage, we're throwing at our energy bills, and we're saying we don't have any disposable income left, so therefore we're not going to go out and spend. And if we don't go out and spend, then that is what causes a recession, because when shopkeepers out there see that nobody is coming in to go and buy the stuff that they have on display, then they will say, well, I'm going to call it a day. I'm going to close up. And that is the unintended consequence of what is happening with the high inflation that we're seeing. But the other thing, Bharati, is that many people would have said, we've seen the writing on the wall a long time ago.
Yes.
How many people out there, Bharati, have been saying, look at these house prices. I mean, they are just ridiculously high. And why don't you do something about it?
So that's the thing. He was in this mode of saying that it's transitory. We don't have to worry. So clearly they were asleep at the wheel, wouldn't you say, David?
Well, but the thing is, I mean, everybody saw it out there. Why do you think people were screaming and saying that, look, these house prices are becoming so unaffordable now. Why don't you do something about it? And of course, you know, his favorite line was, hey, you know, this is asset price inflation. It's very volatile. It'll go up. It'll come down. And also it's transitory. If we get more builders out there building more houses, then that will increase the supply of houses onto the market. And therefore, house prices will start to come down. But it didn't, Bharati. What really happened was that it was just creating more money. They were creating more money that was actually going into the pockets of wealthy people. And they were going out and buying whatever property was coming onto the market. And thankfully, you know, here in Singapore, we do have cooling measures that try and deter people from speculating on property or buying property just to hoard it. But in other economies, they don't have that. What really happens is that people just go out to the UK and they go and buy themselves a couple of condos, a couple of apartments, and just keep it there because they know that, well, they thought the property prices were just going to carry on going up. But hopefully, you know, some of the medicine that is being administered by the Fed will help to bring down some of those asset prices, not only bring down asset prices in terms of properties, but also bring down stock market prices. Because people are saying the stock market has gone crazy at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And part of that reason was because people didn't have anywhere else to put their money. They drove interest rates down to zero, and in some cases it was below zero. And people said, where am I going to leave my money? So property was one, and the other was the stock market. And people just piled into the stock market. And, of course, the third thing is cryptocurrencies. They piled into cryptocurrencies also. And there were commentators out there saying that Bitcoin could go up to $150,000 per Bitcoin, simply because there was just too much money around. But the central bankers closed their eyes, and they said, it's not our problem. That is the problem of the market. And then now it's become their problem, Bharati.
Yeah, certainly it has. Now, the thing is, David, aside from what the Fed is doing, are there any other ways of numbing the pain of all of this? I mean, a lot of people have said, look, we should have expected inflation, right? Because we did see a long period of low inflation. But it's more than just cyclical, isn't it? There are structural factors. There was economic overheating. There were supply side issues as well caused by the pandemic. So really, was there any way of preventing it? And are there better alternatives at this point to manage this?
Well, I think Ben Bernanke sort of said that they should have increased interest rates a while ago. They shouldn't have waited this long to increase interest rates. But having said that, what Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, said was that there are some things that are out of our control. Energy prices. I mean, who could have foreseen what was going to happen between Russia and Ukraine? They couldn't foresee that. Who could have foreseen that the supply chain disruptions as a result of the shutdowns in China would lead to a curtailment of goods leaving China to go to the rest of the world? I mean, who could have seen that food prices would go up as much as they did when Ukraine was invaded, and consequently things like wheat prices started to go up? I had trouble getting hold of sunflower seeds, believe it or not, because it just wasn't leaving Ukraine at the time. And these kind of disruptions, sure, these are one-off shocks, but we have to ask the question, are any of these things going to be resolved tomorrow?
Yeah.
I mean, are we going to find a resolution between Russia and Ukraine tomorrow? I don't know the answer to that. Maybe yes, maybe no. Will China be able to start manufacturing and reconnecting all of those disrupted supply chains tomorrow? Probably not. And I think as a result of that, the Fed is saying, enough is enough. We're going to increase interest rates. But the worrying thing is, inflation in the U.S. is running at around 8%. And the interest rate in the U.S. is only at 1%. Now, I remember studying economics a long time ago, and it said that your interest rate has to be above your inflation rate in order to put a cap on rising prices. Now, how are they going to get from 1% to 8% if they're only going to be increasing at half a percentage point every meeting? it's going to take, what, 14 meetings before they actually sort of get to 8%. That is assuming inflation doesn't carry on going up from 8% onwards.
So you're recommending a more aggressive approach, an even more aggressive approach?
Well, I'm recommending that I don't actually be a central banker. I don't envy their job at all. I'm an investor. And what I'm saying is that if you are an investor and you have got money lying to one side, you need to do something with that cash, Barathy. You need to put it to work. Because if inflation is running at 8%, in the UK it's 9%, so just call it 10%. It means that if you have $100 or £100 in your bank account, by the end of the year, at the end of 12 months, it will only buy you £90 worth of goods, right? Mm. Because inflation has eaten away that 10% of buying power that you have. And the same goes for everywhere else. I mean, inflation here in Singapore is around about 5%. So if you have a dollar sitting around and you just put it under your mattress somewhere, well, in 12 months' time, it'll only buy you $95 worth of stuff. You've just suddenly burnt $5 from the $100 that you had. Now, you can't afford to do that. So you need to actually put that money to work somehow by investing in companies that have the ability to raise prices. And this is what we keep on calling pricing power. There are many businesses out there, Bharati, that have the ability to raise prices. And I was at a coffee shop the other day, and I looked at the price, and I said to the guy, you just raise your prices by 20 cents for a cup of coffee. And he said, well, what can I do? Inflation. Mm. So he's just suddenly raised his prices by 7%, Bharati, right? He put his prices up by 7% because he says, I can. And do you want to buy the coffee or not? And I think that that will apply to probably a lot of businesses out there, Bharati.
What sectors are you investing in at this point?
Well, at the moment, I'm very keen on things like consumer staples. I mean, any business that is involved in goods that I have to buy on a regular basis. So we're talking about things like soap powders. We're talking about things like foodstuffs that I need to buy on a regular basis. And we know, of course, that companies like Unilever, Procter & Gamble, Reckitt Benckiser, the people that make Dettol, I mean, they are putting up prices because they say that in order to serve our shareholders and in order to protect our profit margins and also our bottom line profits, we have no choice but to go out and increase prices. And so consumer staples are the ones that have that ability. So going back to that coffee shop owner, you want to buy the coffee or not, right? I mean, yeah. It's 20 cents more than it was yesterday. So those are the kind of companies that I am looking at, and those are the ones that I think have pricing power. But unfortunately, there will be some that won't have pricing power. And one example would be Netflix, which was recently in the news. And they said that they're going to be axing about 150 jobs simply because in that industry, Bharati, you've got a number of players. You've got Netflix, you've got Amazon Prime, you've got Disney. So, I mean, those are the companies that are out there trying to vie for the same customers. And if those customers don't have that spending power anymore, they're going to say, I'm going to have to ditch one of these three streaming services. Despite the fact that I like all three of them, I can't afford to have all three, so therefore I have to make my choice. And it looks as though that Netflix has lost around 200,000 subscribers, and they think that in the next quarter they could lose even more, simply because people are tightening their belts, Bharati.
Yeah, so if you're a nice-to-have product, it's really not a good place to be in right now. Now, considering the reasons for the return of inflation and all that we have seen, to what extent do you think, David, it can actually be prevented in the future with more nuanced actions, more nuanced fiscal policy? Or is that just too much to expect?
I think that is wishful thinking. Because one of the problems with inflation is that people argue about the different types of inflation. And who's to say, Bharati, that out of those three things that we talked about, energy prices, food prices, and also supply chain disruptions, who are we to say that they won't be resolved tomorrow, right? Yeah. And if they were resolved tomorrow, then that would actually sort of make the Fed's job and also other central bankers' jobs much easier. And they wouldn't have to do what they are doing at the moment. But it requires a lot of crystal ball gazing. And we just don't have that ability anymore. So what the Fed really does is it works on backward data. So it doesn't really know what is going to happen until the data is actually produced for them. And you're asking these central bankers to try and predict what is going to be happening in the future, which is very difficult to do.
Or at least see that the writing is on the wall and act a lot faster.
Well, I thought it would have been obvious to a lot of people. I mean, going back to that analogy of house prices, when you see house prices going up the level that they are, and young people trying to get onto the housing ladder saying, I can't even get on the housing ladder at the moment, so why doesn't somebody do something about it? But going back to Singapore, at least the government stepped in and said, we're going to try and sort of cool the rise in house prices by imposing some of these additional buyer stamp duty, which was actually a good thing. But other governments, you know, aren't quite as willing to take that sort of drastic step and say that we're going to be imposing additional taxes, additional property taxes on people who are buying property for the sake of buying property rather than to buy property to live in. But that is the government's job. The central banker's job, they only have one thing to do, Barati. They only have one thing to do, which is to control inflation. Nobody's asking them to try and solve the world's problem with regard to disparity between the rich and the poor. Nobody's asking them to do any of those things. Nobody's asking them to sort out the problems with climate change. Yeah, I mean, those are nice to do things, but what we want them to do is to control inflation. And if they can't control inflation, then they've effectively taken their eye off the ball.
And yeah, that's the thing. Hashtag inflation, your only job. Thank you so much, David. David Kwo, co-founder of The Smart Investor. Thanks for joining us on Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.